Hello, I'm Dave Mullins, and you are listening to the Functional Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to episode 21 of the Functional Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with Head. This week, we speak to good friend of mine, Dave Mullins, about all things US college tennis. Dave was a top Irish junior. He played in the Junior Grand Slams. He was an All-American at Fresno State. He was an Irish Davis Cup player, as well as a successful NCAA Division I coach. Dave is back working at the ITA, and he tells us all about the ITA, what he's up to there, what the future plans are, as well as answering questions we got about college tennis from our Instagram followers. Hope you enjoy. And if you know anybody who's interested in college tennis or applying to college tennis, please forward this on to them. Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm great, Fabio. Great to hear from you.
Great to speak to you. I think the last time I saw you, well, it's been a while, but you just packed your bags and left for the States.
Back in the States, I lived in America from 98 to 2016 and was great to get back to Ireland for 3 years from 2016 to 2019. But a fantastic opportunity opened up with the Intercollegiate Tennis Association and went through the process with them and was delighted to get and accept the position and have been back in the States in Arizona since August 5th.
Before we get going into the ITA, I'll just tell the listeners a bit about you. Dave was a top Irish junior. He toured the world playing Grand Slams. He went to Fresno State. You were an All-American, correct?
That's correct, yeah, my senior year.
Great. You were a Irish Davis Cup player, which is an unbelievable achievement to represent your country. Then you went on to be a coach in Oklahoma women's D1 team. You brought them to top 25, which is really impressive. Then you came back to Ireland. You worked as sports manager, did an unbelievable job. I'm testament to that. And now you've gone back to work for the ITA. And so tell me, what are you doing at the ITA?
Yeah, so my title is a really long title, so it might take up the entire podcast, but I'm the Managing Director for Community Engagement and Coach Empowerment. So basically, I'm kind of working in all areas of the organization, but I have a few big projects coming up. One of them is trying to build out a coach education platform so that we're consistently providing tools and guidance for our coaches, and especially our younger coaches, our first-year head coaches or assistant coaches that are coming into the business for the first time and want to get up to speed with how to be successful as a college coach. Because college coaching it's a varied position with a lot of different things coming at you. Not only, you know, are you managing the development of a tennis player, you're also managing the team dynamics, you're recruiting players. So there's a sales component. You might be fundraising for your program. You're marketing your program to try and get, you know, fans out to watch your matches. And so there's a lot that goes into being a college coach. So I will be trying to provide as much information in all those areas in the months and years to come through a number of different modalities. And then the community engagement piece is really focused on, we run a number of championships, especially in the autumn season. We run a number of national championships and regional championships. And then in the springtime, we run some indoor championships. But I'll be trying to be on the ground there at those events and bring in community members to maybe, you know, kind of do a kids' day. Maybe there's a college panel Q&A, maybe it's a high school workshop, but having a chance to interact with individuals with that community and showcase college tennis. So that's, we're trying to just continue to broaden the scope of college tennis and all the great and wonderful opportunities it provides those that participate in it.
That's a lot of hats you're wearing there.
No, it's, look, it's all great stuff. And look, we're a small nonprofit organization similar to a lot of other governing bodies around the world, and you are required to wear a lot of hats to maximize kind of your limited resources. But we've been very fortunate in recent years to be sponsored by Oracle. Oracle are really heavily involved in promoting tennis here in the States, and so they're providing a lot of funding to both the lower pro levels, like the 25K, 15K, up to 100K level pro tournaments in states all around America, and then also we have a number of different ways that we intersect with them. One of the cool things that they do is actually the top US college player each year gets $100,000 from Oracle to help them make the transition onto the Pro Tour, which is just amazing. You know, we can't even wrap our heads around that in Ireland, but in America, these things happen.
Yeah, I think Chris Eubanks got that a couple of years ago.
That's right.
I'm hoping to have him the podcast soon. No exact date, but he did say he'd jump on. So it'd be interesting to see, to ask him how he got on with that $100,000 and see how far it brought him and what use he made of it. That's definitely a question I'm going to ask him. You guys look after the NCAA championships.
No, we don't. NCAA is separate. I mean, we're heavily involved in it, and that's something that's evolved through the years. So we get feedback from our coaches and work closely with our coaches and also with the NCAA to continue to evolve that event. And there may be some more changes coming to it in the years to come, but we don't actually administer that. The NCAA does. We administer all the other college events throughout the year.
Okay, well, is it the ITA Championships that's the big one, is it?
Yeah, so we have the Fall National Championships coming up in Newport Beach in a couple of weeks. So that's there's different ways to qualify that. So we have regional events all around the country, and then the winners and runners-up qualify for that. And then we also, it's the one tournament that also brings the different divisions. So there's five different divisions. There's NCAA Division 1 to 3, and then we have NAIA and also Junior College. So they also played off for a wild card. So each division will get a wild card into the main draw at the Fall Nationals. So it's a really cool event that Oracle, again, are sponsoring, and just brings the best tennis players from all the different divisions together for kind of a Wednesday through Sunday event. And the finals are actually going to be televised on ESPN live and also streamed as well. So it's a really big deal that continues to grow.
And is there a common grounds between the same universities that get to the final of the NCAA championships and the ITA championships, or is it totally different?
So it's different. So yes and no. So our college tennis is split into two seasons. So the autumn or the fall season, as we say here in America, is individual based. So you're still representing your team. So you're still representing your university, but you're playing as an individual within kind of more traditional type draws where, a 64 type draw where you're actually playing to find a winner. And then that winner qualifies then for our national championships. So, and then in the springtime in January to May is the team. So what you'd probably be more familiar with is, six players from this university play six players from that university, and they go at it in both doubles and singles, and then the top teams at the end of the year qualify for the NCAA championships.
Okay, I'm a bit mixed up there, a bit confused over it. I didn't go to college tennis. I know a load of our mutual friends did, and yourself, so I'm unsure of it. So good to be a bit clearer. So we had Paul Jubb on here about 10 episodes ago. He won the NCAA championships.
Right. So to confuse things further for you, Fabio. So there's an individual ranking as well. So the players work on their individual ranking throughout the fall season, but they also continue to work on their ranking, their individual ranking the spring season as well with the dual matches. And then so in May, we have the team event that happens first. They play again. The first few rounds are regional. And then from the quarterfinals to the finals, they're at one site. And then as soon as the team finals end, they go straight into the individual tournament on the men's and women's side. So it's team first, individual second. So Paul Jubb plays at the University of South Carolina. I'm not sure how his team did last year. I think they did pretty well. But then, so he finished the team event and then went into the individual event and won that.
Okay, great. Very confusing. Thanks for explaining that. So Dave, you mentioned future plans for the ITA. Maybe you can tell us a bit more what's in store.
Yeah, so again, the partnership with Oracle is, again, it's a new addition since, so I was out of college tennis for 3 years and being back in it, and to see, just the work that Oracle has done with the ITA, it's pretty amazing. So they're, like I said earlier, they're doing both pro events and college events. So they're now offering wild cards for our winners in various different events into their pro events. So if you win, say, the Fall National Championships in November, you'll get a wild card into maybe a 100K Oracle event in 2020 and really wherever works for the player and the coach and their schedule. And also we have wild card. We have an event in Malibu in California in September. And then we have our All-American Championships in Tulsa, and then our ITA Cup, which combines the Division 2, 3, JUCO and NAIA. And so they're getting wild cards into 15, 25K events. So it's all kind of working together where we're trying to to, you know, those players that do have pro aspirations and are using college tennis as a potential platform and transitionary period. They're getting that exposure to both the college tennis and the pro tennis, but these linkages are helping with that even further. But so there's a lot of exciting things in the works. Like I said, the NCAA tournament is probably going to continue to evolve. You know, we're still going to try and make our fall championships the best they can be, have more connections with ESPN and the tennis channels. So you'll start seeing more and more college tennis on TV. I know it's not on Sky Sports yet over there, but in America, to be on ESPN, that's kind of the equivalent of Sky Sports. And that's a really big deal to our finals of the All-American Championships in Tulsa. They were on ESPNU, which showcases, you know, the NCAA university sports over here. And that was on like 6 p.m. on a Sunday, which is amazing.
Prime time.
So those things weren't happening 5, 10, 50, especially when I played. So to see college tennis on TV is just, it's such a unique, to me, it's the most interesting tennis entertainment out there, especially the team format, the dual format, because we play no ad. You know, there's six matches going on. So especially with people's attention spans, including mine nowadays, you know, you can see, you know, you can look across six courts and you see a deuce point going on and you know it's sudden death, and that's exciting. Our doubles is, it's just one set. People might say it's too quick, but it's so exciting, the energy around it. You know, one break and you're maybe losing, especially on the men's side, but it happens quickly, but it's exciting, and the players are really into it. They understand the importance of it. So there's always something going on where, say, with pro tennis, you know, it's one match and you've got the 25 seconds in between points and the set breaks, and, you know, people are looking at their phones in between or going off or grab a beer or whatever. In a college match, you don't really want to leave your seat. It's so exciting. So that's something that hopefully will be showcased more and more on TV, and people around the world can just see what a great product it is.
It sounds exciting. It's good that they're trying these new things to not just sticking with, I know the ATP Tour are trying it as well with different events, the Laver Cup tried it, and just to mix things up a little bit. But do you find players from, let's say players that go through the college system, where now there's these intense matches on, short sets, every point counts, do you find the same player may not do as well on the pro tour when he's on his own, has to think about everything himself? Is it a special type of player that does well?
Yeah, look, I think it's a special type of player that does well regardless. Whether you go to college or turn pro and have success as a pro, you're a special individual. You know, the way you approach your day-to-day and manage your time and the work that you're willing to put in, and your ability to block out distractions, you know. So that's sometimes, whether you go pro or go to college, you're going to make it. You know, if you're going to make it, it doesn't matter if you go pro or go to college, you're going to make it, because you kind of have that mindset. And yeah, and maybe college gives you a few years just to mature a little bit more, both physically and mentally, and maybe save a bit of money before you try and crack the pro tour. But, you know, I found as a coach, because I was coaching before the score changes and after the score changes, and I found that once we played the no ad, that our ability to focus, or the necessity to focus, definitely increased, because on your serve, you don't want to be in a deuce point situation. Yeah. So now when you're 30 love up, you know, when you're serving, sometimes a 30 love up, you relax a little bit, maybe you double fault, maybe you don't pay as much attention. But when you're 30 love up now, you're thinking, I don't want to go to 30-15, because that could lead to 30 all, and that could lead to a deuce point. So, and then playing those deuce points, you're having more exposure to that pressure. So I think those college players are maybe being exposed to pressure points on a more consistent basis. So I could maybe argue that they're getting more repetitions of dealing with that, and also the pressure of having to win for a team. Because it's easy as an individual, you can decide, well, you know, I don't really want to suffer today, so I've lost this first set, you know. Maybe not as blatant as tanking, but it's like, how badly do I want to suffer today? Do I want this to go to a third set? But when you're playing for a team, you're more likely to be willing to suffer, because you're playing for something greater than yourself. And I guess players' ability to learn how to suffer, and suffer might be too strong a word, I think you know what I mean, but I think that's something where maybe players in college are being pushed out of their comfort zone a little bit more than they would as individuals. But at the end of the day, if you're good enough to make it, whether you go to college or not, you're going to make it. We've seen it on both sides.
Yeah, it's just a different route, but the end result should be close enough the same. So what should a guy's had 4 good years in college, done well ITA tournaments, NCAA tournaments, what sort of rank, they can sort of step into the program, they can quickly move up the rankings, 300-400. That's quite normal, is it?
It is, yeah. I think you've got to prove yourself at every level. And I think a lot of federations around the world are recognizing now that if a player isn't having success at the pro level, by 17, 18, then they're probably better off going to college and, taking a few more years to evolve and develop. And, there too many decisions are being made on junior success. And junior success, I saw it in college when I played. There was guys on the ITF junior tour that were destroying me as a junior. And then we get into college a couple of years later, I've made big improvements and now I'm destroying them. Junior success does not equal pro success. They're two different worlds. So, that's the great thing. If you haven't proved yourself at, say, the 25K level as a 17, 18 year old, and you're, consistently making quarter, semis, finals, and even winning them, then you're probably not ready, for the pro tour. And you may want to go think about going to college. And yeah, we see those top college players. Once you've proven yourself at college at the highest levels, you probably, translate to a top 350 ATP player. And then what you do from there, it's on you, but at least you haven't wasted is too strong a word, but you haven't spent all this time, say at the 15K level, just grinding it out, spending a huge amount of money just to get those matches, just to get those experience, just to mature a little bit, 3 or 4 years there where you're kind of this, top great junior and playing in US Open, Junior Wimbledon, rubbing shoulders with Roger Federer. And then you find yourself in,
Nigeria,
Nigeria. Yeah. Just grinding it out. And would you have been better served playing in college tennis for a few years? But look, that debate will rage on and people have different opinions on it. But from my experience, if you're not proving yourself as a pro at age 18, then college is a great alternative for a few years.
Yeah, I think you just got to be able to get out of those futures quickly. We did an episode with Jay Clark. He's probably 21 now. And he went from coming on the world ranking, so 2000 to about 250 in 18 months. He just said he didn't want to stick around there and he did all he could to just get out of the futures as quick as he could. It doesn't work out for most people, but for the better ones, they put their head down. They can actually get out the futures quickly. So even the good college lads, the guys who do the Noah, I know Noah Rubin only stuck around for a year, but there's so many others that they finished and they can quick, they don't really play. They play futures while they're in college and then they go straight. They might get a bit of success and they're straight in the Challenger Tour and they move up. But there's probably more that haven't done well than have. So tend to talk about the successes more than the failures.
A little bit sad to get a call from like a 20, 21 year old pro who, kind of gave you a little bit of time when they were 17, 18, but said, no, look, I'm going pro. This is it. And then they call you when they're 20 and they're like, how do I go to college?
Too late.
Unfortunately, in many cases, it's just too late. And, but you knew as a coach watching them play, they're like, oh, they're going to struggle as a pro, but you can only tell them you give them the information and you let them make up their own mind, but you hope that they're getting good advice from all different sides and not just one opinion.
A good guy come through the system is Dominic Koffler.
Yeah. He was a great story. Yeah.
I'm going to have him on the podcast. I was in the Fitz changing room and a mutual friend of ours, Niall Fitzgerald, talking to him and he goes, why don't you get Dominic on the podcast? I was like, how do you know him? And Niall was like, I coached him. He recruited him back in Germany and he goes, he knows him really well. So he's going to organize that. So it'll be exciting to hear his story. He put in 4 years work. He was good, but he didn't have any junior results at all. Really worth talking about, but said he was good. Niall took him on and he ended up being, obviously, we know what he did at the US Open this year and hopefully he can move on from that. So that would be a good episode. But I'm going to, Dave, touch into, we asked our Instagram followers, we told them we were going to be talking to a college tennis expert and they came up with some questions that I'd like to ask you that I think a lot of people can benefit from. So I'm going to go through them here with you. And the first one is, who should go to college tennis? Who should go play college tennis?
Look, it's definitely not for everybody. I mean, it's somebody who wants to continue to develop their tennis. Not all people want to continue, some players, you know, are burnt out by the time they've been playing since they're 5 years old, and they get to 18, they're like, oh, I don't want to see another tennis racket. But, you know, those players that want to continue to play at a high level and play for a team and, you know, combine their athletic pursuits with their studies, you know, there's no better place to do it than, you know, the college system over here, because there's so many different levels and opportunities over here and scholarship opportunities as well. So, I mean, I think, yeah, it's a broad question, but really, yeah. I mean, and people who are willing to look, if you're a US player, it's how far do you want to travel away from home? If you're an international player, do you even want to leave home? You know, is it the right thing for you to come to the States, or do you want to go to college locally and continue to play, you know, leagues or local tournaments or whatever it is? So it's not for everybody by any means, but it is. I can, again, attest to my experience. It absolutely changed my life and was the best decision I believe I've ever made. So I'm a huge proponent of it, obviously. Yeah. And now working on a daily basis is a dream come true for me.
Obviously, everybody thinks the end goal is pro, but tennis can be a great mechanism to get you into a great college that you wouldn't get in, like to get into, I don't know, Stanford, an Ivy League college. There's so many other great universities in the States that all of a sudden they use tennis to as the mechanism, and then you can major in whatever you want, and the job potentials are absolutely amazing.
Well, that's just it. I mean, there's, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can go with it, and you've got this, you know, skill that you've developed for many years. You've invested a huge amount of time, and probably parents have invested a huge amount of money and time and resources into allowing their child to develop, you know, those skills. And then the university system in America, you know, very different to Ireland, it takes into account the learnings that you've probably received through your athletic pursuits, that they kind of give you credit for that learning. I mean, I believe that I learned more from my college coach than I did from any professor. Now I'm around the college coach on a daily basis, so it's not really fair, but the lessons I learned as an athlete, you know, working on my own game, working within a team, being pushed and being advised by my college coach. I mean, there's so many lessons I apply to this day. And I say, you know, my coach made a man of me. You know, I went over there a little bit soft, a little bit, you know, kind of servally dinking drop shots and things like that, and he turned me into a grinder, you know, and
a machine.
So yeah, I mean, there's many different ways you can go with it, but yeah, the opportunities are I don't want to say they're endless, but based on your level and where you know your level of tennis, there's probably going to be several opportunities within that level that provides you with a good scholarship, provides you with a number of degree options, and then it's up to you how you take advantage of it. And that's the thing. I mean, there's, you know, you can come over here and do the bare minimum and just scrape by in your classes, or you can come over and really take advantage of it, make connections, do internships. You know, you can meet boosters and people engage with your program that are always looking to help you and provide you professional opportunities if they're there. And yeah, especially for, I mean, kid coming from Ireland, say, to have those options both in the States and back home in Ireland, it's, God, I mean, you're just opening up more options, I believe.
This podcast is brought to you by ASICS Tennis. ASICS is a Japanese company founded in 1949 with the purpose of giving more people the opportunity to experience how sport and movement can have a positive impact on mental well-being. They just launched their most innovative tennis range ever. Get the new Cord FF3 Novak or Gel Resolution 9 at ASICS.com. ASICS Tennis have also just launched their new Cord FF3 Novak, the only tennis shoe designed with Novak Djokovic input. To learn more about ASICS, visit their website www.asics.com. Okay, what are coaches looking for? So I'm a player, I'm decent in my country, I'm top five in my country, I'm thinking of going to the States on scholarship. What exactly are coaches, recruiters looking for when they see me play? Is there something that they're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, it really starts with results, Fabio. I mean, they're going to, and these days, there's no real hiding from your results. Everything's up on the internet and UTR and even, you know, country's own, you know, in Ireland, again, the tournament software, any coach can log in there, type in a player's name and pull up a player's profile. So you can't really make up results anymore and bluff score lines and say you lost 7-6, 7-6 when you lost 1-2. So they're really interested in your results, first and foremost. Then they're going to look at indicators such as UTR. They're going to look at ITF rankings. The WTN now is coming on board, and coaches will be quick to adopt that and understand that. College coaches are often a little bit ahead of the game because their jobs are dependent upon, you know, making sure they're recruiting players of the appropriate standard that allow their teams to improve and win matches at the college level. So I'd say results, ratings, rankings, and then they start getting into, you know, your academics, your personality, you know, your, I guess, you know, commitment, your passion for the game. And they'll also want to see a video of your game as well. I mean, if you go on YouTube now, you'll see, you know, a million different recruiting videos out there, but coaches need to see you play.
While we're on topic of videos, what's important having the video? Like, I could do up a video of me playing and could look unbelievable. But what's the best way to showcase your talents, but not go over the top, and because you're going to be found out?
Exactly. I mean, I really believe it's point play as much as possible. I mean, as a college coach, I'd get videos all the time, and there'd be a little introduction. Hi, I'm Dave, and blah, blah, blah. And then they, you know, doing some fed ball, and then there's maybe cross court forehand. You don't even see where the ball's going. You don't see what quality ball they're receiving. So really, they want to set the camera up behind the court. You know, they can see you know, the quality of your ball, how you're moving, how you're constructing points, the type of ball you're receiving. And, you know, initial video, you know, obviously, you know, you can edit it out and, you know, make it concise, maybe 8 to 10 minutes or so. But start with point play. And then if you feel like during the point play, you didn't really capture certain aspects of your game, maybe you've got a nice slice backhand, but you didn't showcase enough of that, or maybe you didn't feel like you got to the net enough or were able to hit a few overheads, then put that at the end of the video. I think too many recruiting services, too many players are starting with that and then doing the points at the end. It's like, put the meat of it at the beginning, the stuff that really matters, because coach wants to see how they're moving, how they're setting up points, how they're maybe transitioning forward, how they're defending. Showcase those things first, and then anything that's missing, you know, you can put that in the end. So that's how ideally I do it. And then from there, the coach then will at least get a taster of your game, your results, your ratings, and then they'll probably want to see an unedited version of a match play, maybe a set where they're, you know, they're seeing the good and the bad, not just the great points. Yeah.
So obviously results are the main thing. If your results speak for themselves, that's the biggest help. Then they want to see a video. And tell me, word of mouth must be massive also. Recommendation must mean a lot.
You know, not as much as you think, Fabio. It depends who you're speaking with. And there's coaches and parents out there, you know, they rave about this player and say, oh, this player is just the hardest worker I've ever had. And, you know, their improvements have been off the charts. And then, you know, 6 months later, you speak them about another player. Oh, this player's the hardest work I've ever had. And it's like, well, and then these players come in and coaches don't realize that they're actually losing credibility with college coaches because they're overselling their players. Coaches will take that into account. And obviously they'll have relationships with people that, you know, the coaches that they know really well and can trust, and trust that the coach knows the college game as well and knows kind of how the college coach operates their program and their coaching philosophy and knows exactly what they're looking for. So it really depends on, you know, who the opinion is coming from.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So
that's a good point. Obviously, the question I get asked most of the time is, how can I get recruited? And it's a bit like, more than that, is more of a spot from the sponsorship side of things. I want to be sponsored by Head or by whoever else. And I'm saying, how are your results going? And if you're getting the results, you're going to get sponsorship. Recruiters are going to find out about you if you're winning big matches, winning tournaments. But is there any other way that you can be recruited? Is there conferences, showcases in the States that players can attend?
Sure, yeah. No, they're popping up all over the place, both in the States and in Europe. So there's showcases, you know, throughout the year, different parts. I'm actually speaking at one in December out in Florida. Tennis Recruiting, a website here in the States, is partnering with us on. So these things are happening and they are good opportunities to showcase your talents. But, you know, that's not feasible for everybody. And it's putting together, you know, a package of who you are, what your game is, what your goals are, you know, in a concise way. I think sometimes, again, as a college coach, I'd receive these long letters telling me about their, you know, how they started tennis and their, you know, grandfather got them started and they're doing all this volunteer service. And it's nice to hear, but it's not the first thing I want to hear. I want to see how are their ratings, how are their results progressing, what are their upcoming tournaments. Let's take a look at their video, because there's plenty of, like, Dominic's a good story, you know, that you mentioned earlier. Like, there's underdeveloped players there that you know, might only be playing a few times a week, haven't been exposed to the same level of coaching as others, but you see something in their athletic ability. You see the way they move on the court. You see how, you know, lively their arm is. You know, maybe you see them play and you recognize how their willingness to compete, their willingness to fight for every point. You know, so there's lots of different things there that coaches are looking at. But no, I mean, in today's, you know, technological age, you know, with the ease of which videos can be made, the ease in which they can be shared, you know, you could take every match you play and send it to a coach. So, you know, all coaches' email addresses are for public viewing. You could go to Google and just say, type in, I worked at the University of Oklahoma. So I'll just put that out there. You know, you can go to the University of Oklahoma athletic department. So you put that in Google. And then you go to their staff directory and you scroll down and you click on the men's tennis coach. You got his email address there and you do that for 20 colleges. It will take you, you know, whatever, 20 minutes to compile a list of 20 emails. You know, take a look at their roster. You know, don't, you know, there's no point going and, like you said, you know, Stanford or Oklahoma and you're a 10.0 UTR and you know, the average there is, you know, maybe a 13.9 or a 14 or close to 15, maybe UTR, you know, obviously the
close to 15.
Yeah. I mean,
that's pretty high. Like,
it's getting higher. I know. I think the UTR addressed that, I think, over the summer, and a lot of the UTRs dropped again, but they were pushing up to 15, some of them. So, but that is, you know, there's no point. I think sometimes I'd come across players and they have in their mind that they only want to play, you know, top division one, and they'll name, you know, places like UCLA and Stanford and Florida State and these colleges that everybody knows, but their results don't match up. They're actually wasting time emailing those places. I don't want to dash anybody's dream. You need to find your level and where you fit in. And yes, you might be the hardest worker and the greatest competitor, but you're going to have to show a coach proof of that. And they're going to have to see you evolving and improving in those directions. But, you know, there's so many opportunities out there, Division I, Division II, Division III, junior college and NAIA. And there's a scholar. If you're a serious junior player and you're playing consistently and you're getting a bit of coaching and you're playing as many matches as you can, there's probably a scholarship there for you somewhere if this is what you want to do.
You'll find a way. Tell me, you mentioned, obviously, there's a stigma that everybody wants to play D1 tennis, but D2 tennis is pretty competitive. Players are not far off. Like, it's a money thing more than anything, is it?
It's a few different things. So the depth at Division One is quite deep now. So you can go down to 150 colleges probably, and they're all really good and probably going to push one another. And, you know, on any given day, 150th ranked team can beat number 72 kind of thing, and number 72 can beat 22. And that wasn't the case, you know, 15 years ago. It's just the depth has continued to get better. So when you go to Division 2, 3, you know, it's probably not going down to 150 colleges, but you've got, you know, really competitive teams at the top of those divisions. I was just at the what we call the ITA Cup, which is the Division 2, 3 NAIA and Junior College Championships, and the level was outstanding. I was walking around. I mean, all those players could have played somewhere at Division One. They just chose to go to a different division, maybe for scholarship reasons, maybe for eligibility reasons, maybe for academic reasons. Players need to get clear on why they're going to college and what they want to get out of it. But absolutely, players need to open themselves up to looking at colleges at all different levels and figuring out where the best fit is for them.
Yeah, I'm just having a look here at the D2 rank, men's rankings here, where it has one is Columbus State, Barry University, Hawaii Pacific, University of South Carolina, Wingate, West Florida. They are in the fancy places, but obviously they don't have the big time names. As you say, there's 150 colleges in D1, and most of them I probably won't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, once you go beyond kind of those brand name colleges that everybody all over the world knows, then it's, you know, how are you picking and choosing? And that's where you need to get clear. Do you want to go to kind of maybe a team ranked, say, and I say ranked, rankings change all the time, but, you know, around, say, 200 in Division One, or do you want to go and play on a top 20 team at Division Two? And yeah, I mean, some of The resources are often similar. It depends what part of the country they're in. If it's, you know, tennis can be certain times relatively cheap from a college standpoint because, you know, it's not like the soccer team where you have 25 individuals. And, you know, if you're, say, a Division II school in Florida, you just need some outdoor courts and you've got a bunch of great colleges around you that you can drive to or they can drive to you. Or there's cold weather climate schools that want to travel out there during their spring break or, you know, get out there and play some outdoor tennis. So there's so many different options and junior players just need to keep an open mind. I just, when they close their mind off to, oh, I don't want to go there or to that part of the country. Or like I went to Fresno State, like nobody knows where Fresno is, but it's you know.
Well, it's in San Diego, no?
There you go. It's in California. It's not in San Diego. It's kind of halfway between San Francisco and LA. I landed in a great spot with an amazing coach, an amazing team. And we were, you know, one year we were top 10 in the college rankings and the other years top 25. And I wouldn't change that experience for anything. You have to keep an open mind.
You can be narrow-minded, I'm sure. Back when I was 18, thinking about college tennis, not that I was ever really going to go, but I probably would have been more of the narrow-minded. But anyway, that's another story.
Well, just to build on that a bit, Fabio, as well. So I had a few different opportunities at different colleges, and tennis was really important to me. And I wanted to go to a program and a coach that I felt like could continue to develop my game. That was really important to me. And that's why I chose Fresno. And I did my degree in business and finance. And I ended up actually working in finance in the Mercantile Exchange in Chicago, you know, shoulder to shoulder with graduates from Harvard and the University of Chicago and Northwestern and Yale and Princeton. But I'd made my way, you know, to the same organization as they did. And I used tennis as that vehicle. And I used my contacts through tennis. And that was really my vehicle. And, you know, them seeing my work ethic, my, you know, my willingness to learn, my ability to work with a team, my personality. So it's sometimes people, you know, have this goal of, oh, well, I want to go work in finance. So I've got to go to, you know, the top Ivy League college. Well, that's not true. You get an opportunity and it's on you to make the most of that.
It's probably a bit like, I want to be a pro player. I have to go to a famous tennis academy.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's many different pathways and it's just, it's on you to figure out how to get there. It might take you a little longer or in some ways a little shorter, but that's what I'm saying. Just keep an open mind and especially if you're looking for a scholarship and you're looking for a big scholarship, then you're going to have to cast your net very wide.
And tell me, what is the application process? So obviously your results speak for themselves. That's one part taken care of. Do you still have to sit the SAT exams?
Yeah. So look, again, I think, yeah, speaking in general terms, you have to sit an SAT or an ACT exam. In order to qualify for most colleges, you have to have an SAT score or an ACT score and a high school diploma. So if you tick those boxes, generally, that's a good starting point. And then each university has their own admission standards. To be eligible for NCA, say, you know, there's a minimum standard and it's a sliding scale based on your grades during high school and also your SAT or ACT results. But then each individual college will say, no, we have a minimum, say, of this score that you need to get in. But if you start with that, then, and the colleges, you know, the coaches will help you through that process. So if a coach receives your video and your little letter about, you know, yourself and they, you know, are interested, they're probably going to get you to send your grades in, your scores. They're going to look at that and come back and say, hey, you know, you need an extra 100 points on your SAT exam, or, you know, how are you doing in your classes now in your final year? And you're probably going to need an A or a B in this class, or you're missing this other class. You know, you're going to have to make that up. They'll help you through that process. So it's really starting, you know, there's no point putting in, if you're interested in, you know, Notre Dame, there's no real point in putting in an application and then contacting the coach at a later date. You start with the coach, you try and develop interest there, and then they'll help you through the application process. So it's not really something that players need to worry about up front. I mean, I would encourage them to do the ACT or SAT, especially if they're international, start wrapping their head around that, start taking some practice tests online. If English is not their first language, they'll have to take the TOEFL exam as well. So there's a few hurdles there they need to get over. Yeah, there's some cost involved as well to sign up for these things, but I think at the end of the day, it's worth it. And even, I mean, I tell players, players as well that are, you know, in Ireland or elsewhere around the world, to just you know, keep your options open. Do you may decide you don't want to go to college in the States, but you know, take the SAT. You know, contact a few coaches. You know, maybe you decide it's just not for you, and you end up going to college more locally in your country, or maybe somewhere else in Europe or wherever it is. But I'm just a big believer in keeping your options open.
Yeah, that sounds really positive. People have to, I don't know, get the results. The results will take care of everything. That's all I'm going to say. The results are there.
Yeah.
Everything else will be taken care of. But no, the coach, if obviously you send your videos and your bio to the coaches and they like you, as you say, they're going to do their best to help you because they want you. So that makes total sense. I wasn't sure what way to go about it before, whether like just thinking about it, what way you reach out and then obviously the college admission stuff.
Right. No, start with the coach and they will hold your hand through the entire process.
So get onto Google. Oklahoma State is going to have a load of players contacting them.
Yeah, I mean, just that's where you start, and just not to plug anybody, but if you go to www.tennisrecruiting.net and then on their tabs there, they have men's teams and women's teams. And if you go to men's teams, say Division One, it pulls up all the different conferences and all the different programs. So you can get a sense of, you know, all the colleges out there and start with that and start, you know, maybe you do come up with a criteria that, you know, you want to play. Maybe you're a big server and you feel like you'll have more success indoors. Maybe you start looking at colleges around the Midwest or East Coast and, you know, putting together a list based on the rosters and the UTRs and figuring out, and then just start looking up their email, the coach's email address, and start firing things out. It's really straightforward. And then there's lots of great recruiting services out there as well that will help you through that process and make sure you stay on the right track. And they're great services because, you know, they're advocating for you. They'll also be holding your hand through the process. They'll, you know, advise you on any snags that come up. They can also help negotiate scholarships on your behalf, which might save you tens of thousands of dollars. You know, if there's somebody, coach comes back and says, okay, we're going to offer you, you know, 50% or whatever, and you have somebody helping you with those negotiations, maybe that goes up to 70% and you've just saved yourself, you know, 60 grand over 4 years. I mean, so there's lots of benefits there to using those services as well. And they're popping up all over the place and are continuing to get better and better.
Great. I'm sure there's a service in most countries. And so tell me, we're going to end this shortly, but a question I have for you is, I don't know if it's a question now, but is there anything else you think that's important to tell people who are considering the possibility of going to college? Anything that we haven't talked about?
No, I think just keep coming back to it starts with results. I just speak with so many parents and players and they want to talk about, you know, they just want to keep coming back to, you know, the personality and the work ethic and how popular they are with their peers. And like I said, that's all really important, but it's not a starting place. And coaches will, to let you in on an insider secret, coaches will say things like, oh yeah, you know, we want a team player. We want somebody who'll put the team first and who's mature, and they say that, and not that they don't believe, they do believe that and they do want it, but then they're 9 times out of 10, they're going to go with the individual that has the better results and hope that they figure out the other bits and pieces and are a good team player and all the rest of it. But players and parents understanding that it comes down to results, and it's not just necessarily wins. It's not just, oh, I beat so-and-so. It's also score lines. So if a coach sees that you just lost 6-4 in the third set to a player ranked 120 in the ITF, or so, you know, I'm just giving throwing an example out there, but getting a sense of what your score lines, if they're constantly seeing, you know, 7-6, 6-0, or they're seeing every third tournament you're retiring. I mean, I see that all the time, and that's a huge red flag. Like, is this player retiring because they're injured, and why are they injured all the time? Or are they retiring because they just don't want to take the loss and think they're protecting themselves in some way? So it just comes back to good score lines, you know, having a good record against players of a similar level or better. It's not about, I won, you know, I got a trophy here, I won the local club championships, or, you know, I mean, it's coaches are just purely looking at those results, and then everything slides in under that. So I just wanted to reiterate that.
Sounds great. That's some great advice there. I'm sure plenty of people be listening and they will have probably more questions to ask after that. But no, thank you very much. You're actually due, I saw on Twitter, you bought some podcasting equipment. So you're due to launch a podcast very soon.
Yeah. So it may not be that interesting to many of your listeners, Fabio, because I'm purely doing it from a college coach education standpoint. So I'm interviewing college coaches because I found as a college coach and in my conversations with coaches now that peer-to-peer learning is gold. That's where we as college coaches develop the most when we're able to hear ideas and have conversations and provide scenarios and solutions to one another. So this is kind of the brainchild of the podcast. Every 2 weeks, I'm going to be sending out a podcast to our coaches with some other thoughts, maybe some videos, maybe some articles, things that I think are relevant to college coaches. But it's not to say, I don't want to say that your listeners won't be, but it will be very specific to college coaches and trying to pull out their thoughts and their ideas. But I think every so often there will be a coach, like I just interviewed a coach named Greg Patton, who's a legendary coach at Boise State. Do you know Greg?
I happened to be in Tennis Ireland one day. He was just back from Paris and I was with Simon Carr.
Oh, that's right.
And we ended up doing a doubles drill with him, which was amazing. He was so intense. He was like, do this. And it was an hour. I thought it was a great hour. I had no idea who this guy was, apart from he was the head of the US college team. And he had his son over. Is it his son? Is his son a coach as well?
Yes.
Yeah, he was there.
Yes, his son's a coach as well. Yeah.
So it was his coach. It was his son, it was me, Simon, and I'm not sure if it was Amar. And yeah, he had us doing doubles drills there, which they were really, I thought they were great. Like,
he's a wealth of experience as both a college coach and a USTA national coach as well. And you'd be shocked at the number of pro players he's worked with and intersected with. So I just interviewed him and he goes into a lot about coaching philosophy and kind of passion and finding your joy and how to connect with that and, you know, your reason for coaching. So I might be short selling it to you here, Fabio, but no, thanks for bringing it up. And it will be available iTunes and everywhere else. It's going to be called the ITA College Tennis Coaches Podcast.
There you go. The ITA College Coaches Podcast. On our Instagram account, we've like loads of coaches follow us. So I'm not sure how many listen to this. Maybe they can let me know. But there's definitely coaches that always want to learn. And I know everybody's not fully sold on the podcast thing, but more and more people are listening to podcasts, which is great. And yeah, so thank you very much, Dave. Really appreciate your time and the wealth of knowledge. I know we could talk about your muggins in Venezuela and so much more. And yeah, so that's for another day. Today was college tennis specific, but thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Fabio. Absolute pleasure. Keep up the great work. Keep putting out the great information that you're doing. And I'll be sharing your information with college coaches as well, because, you know, they're always looking for new ideas and new ways of doing things and listening to conversations such as this. Obviously, they know what I've been talking about today, but many of the other guests that you're going to have on, I think they'll be fascinated to listen to. So I'll be pushing that out in the coaching education material I put out there. But yeah, thanks for having me on, and hope to see you over this side of the world at some point, but definitely we'll catch up next time I'm back in Ireland.
I hope you found that conversation with Dave very interesting. If you're planning to go to US college, or know somebody who is going to US college or wants to go, or you're just interested in it, I definitely picked up a few bits that I never knew of, so I thought it was great. In the meantime, I'm very excited for next week's podcast. I want to say thanks to our sponsors Head, and until next week, go hit some forehands. Bye.